I can't. I'm on Zoom. I can't. Oh, you have We'll start in about a minute, just give me 1 second. Okay, good evening, everyone. We'll make a start. Welcome to this new Kabbalah series, The Power of Words. A little different this time. I'm sorry I can't welcome everyone into my home like I did the last few times. On the other hand, it's really important, especially as we go through this period where we're all a bit unsettled and locked down and so on, just to reflect and get together and to learn and reflect a little bit. So it's all, it's a good thing. So welcome. So this two-part series this week and next week is about the power of communication, the power of words. As we know that words are used in many, many different ways, and we know that the power of words is tremendous, both for the positive and for the negative. And hopefully we're going to talk about what words really mean from a mystical and Kabbalistic point of view, and also understanding what that means in terms of the practicalities of how we use words in an effective way. And we know that so much has been written, even in a modern context, about the concept of communication. We know that in relationships, for example, so much depends on the power and the effectiveness of communication. And we know that especially how we express to each other our emotions, our responses, our feelings, our perspectives. And we know that so much can go wrong or right, either because of the absence of communication or bad communication. And we know that, as I said, in modern day literature, there's the power of communication is written about so much. Just a couple of months ago, we did a Thursday morning series, which we called, it was based on a book called Conversational Intelligence by Judith Glasser, where she talks about this idea that conversations are not what we think they are. Sometimes we've grown up thinking of a narrow view of conversations that's about talking, sharing information, telling people what to do or telling others what's on our minds and so on. But now we know that it's been researched, and she talks about the research from a neurological scientific point of view, that conversations are so much more powerful. And in fact, conversations have the power to move us from one type of relationship to another. And she says it has the power to move us from the power over others to the power with others. So that's just an example of so much has been written about the power of communication. And I'm sure some of you share with me this memory that as children we were taught the saying, I guess it was in the, I suppose the purpose of that saying or the intention was good. The intention was to teach us the art of resilience and being strong and so on. So they would teach us that sticks and stones can break your bones, but words can never hurt you, or something like that, which is obviously nonsense, because, you know, that's simply not true. We know that words can be extremely hurtful, and in fact, words can damage sometimes more than physical damage can do. You know this from literature on abusive relationships, for example, that sometimes emotional abuse, which happens through words and manipulation and putting people down and humiliating people and so on, can leave worse scars than violence. Now, of course, the natural instinct is always to respond to violence as a crisis, which is true, because in the short term, that's when a person can get injured or hurt and can be very damaging on a physical level and so on. So we respond to that. But the truth is that abusive behavior through words can be actually worse. Not short term, the person is not in physical danger, but the scars and the damage can actually be worse. So words are very, very, very powerful. Now, it's interesting because, as we've explained many times, words are, and I want to sort of explore this tonight a little bit, and we'll come at the end, we'll understand why this is so, but the reality is the following, that words on the one hand are nothing, right? Meaning a person can just say any word that doesn't make sense, because words are really nothing on their own. Words are just what you put into them. So in other words, words are not, don't really serve any purpose or not really anything. They're empty things as they are on their own. Words on the surface are as good as the content that we put into them. Be it if the content was intellectual, emotional, discussion, negotiation, feelings, expression, whatever the case is, right? Yet we know that that's not true. Because if that was completely true, then nothing would change with the content when we put it into words. In other words, the content, the feeling, the emotion, the intellectual idea would just remain the same. The only difference would be is that instead of holding it within myself, I'm communicating it to someone else. So we know that's not true, because we know the power of words is such that when we put something into words, suddenly they change. So for example, in an emotion, right? That when it comes to emotions and feelings, the more you talk, the stronger the feeling becomes. And this is both the negative and the positive. So if someone is angry and they start talking about the anger, as they talk, the anger grows. If someone expresses love, which is why it's so important to express emotions that are positive and negative for that matter, but in a healthy way, the emotion becomes stronger. Which is why sometimes feelings, even from a Jewish point of view, we find in the Torah the critical importance of actually expressing things that more than even acting them out, more than behavior. I'll just give you an example. There's a mitzvah in the Torah called Bikurim, which is bringing the first fruits. When bringing the first fruits in ancient Israel, in the time of the temple, farmers would bring the first fruits to the temple and give it to the Kohen, to the priest, and it was a sign of gratitude, to express gratitude from God for the gift of having the land of Israel and the fruits that it produces and so on and so forth. But the Torah very explicitly mandates that when a person would bring the fruit to the temple, it wasn't enough just to perform the mitzvah of bringing the fruit as a gesture of gratitude, but the person bringing the fruit also had to make a declaration of gratitude. In other words, it was important to verbalize the gratitude, because somehow the gratitude becomes deeper, stronger, more powerful when it's expressed in words. The same is true with intellect. I'm sure everyone's had this experience. That sometimes you know a concept, you understand an idea, and when you start explaining it to someone else, it's not just that you've transferred the idea from you to the other person, but it's become that much clearer. It's become so much amazingly clearer with the person that has talked, because you put it into words. So we mentioned many times that the analogy that Kabbalah gives for this is the horse and the rider. So if someone rides a horse, we know that apparently, because I'm not very good at riding horses, but But if someone rides a horse, so you're in control, or the rider should be in control, and the horse will only go where the rider directs it to go. Yet the horse will facilitate the rider getting there much quicker than the rider can get there if he would or he or she would walk. And same thing if the person takes the wrong turn, the horse will bring the person to be more lost very quickly, much more quickly than if the person went themselves. So therefore, it's the same idea. Words are nothing, and yet they carry whatever is put into the words deeper and further than the content put into the words could reach on its own. I hope that's clear. Just incidentally, although I've muted everyone, but actually you could unmute yourself. So therefore, if you want to ask a question or interrupt, with by all means. So what I'm going to do is the following. I want to explore this idea, actually, of why it is that words have such a power and what that power is. But to do that, what I'm going to do is I'm first going to share with you four brief ideas that we find in Jewish literature about the power of words. These are things that we have done in the past, but then I'm going to share with you a much deeper idea, a Kabbalistic idea, which hopefully will help shed light on this whole idea. It's a deep concept. I'll share it with you, and then we'll be able, through that, to understand the true power of words. And then we'll, at the end, we'll try and understand what that means for us and what we do about that. So briefly, again, this is for those that have been in Thursday morning. This is a little bit of revision for the next few minutes, but then we'll go to something deeper then. So in Jewish thought, we find four amazing powers of words. There's four amazing things that we find with regard to communication and words that have tremendous, tremendous power. The first is, I'll just tell you all four, and then I'll explain each one. Number one, words create, we find. Secondly, words reveal. Thirdly, words bind us. And fourthly, and perhaps the most important, is that words connect. What does that mean? So first of all, words create. So we find this, first of all, with God, right? The first time we discover the power of words or the significance of communication is from the very creation. God created the world through words. As the Pirkei Avot tells us, but I think it's the Fathers tells us, that God created the world through 10 utterances. Now, what that means and what does speech mean with God, that's something actually we can explore next week, but that's what it says. He used words. He used the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet as tools to create the universe. But it's not just God. God gave us the same power. Words carry within themselves the creative power. Now, this is very significant, because what that means is that when we say something, every time we talk, both negatively and positively, we create a reality. I should pause here. Last time we did something on speech, someone tells me, well, then if that's the case, I sort of scared them. And I said, well, if that's the case, maybe it's just better to remain silent all the time. So that's not my intention at all, because as we know, we are people that speak. Our power is communication, and the intention is never to keep quiet. Intention is only to develop skills, to aspire at least, and to sometimes put that into practice, to have positive speech. So what I'm going to say now might be scary sometimes, but nevertheless, that's not the intention. So first of all, words create, and they create a reality. The best example of this, of course, is the story, the famous story of the Baal Shem Tov, which I've mentioned many times. The story of the Baal Shem Tov is, the Baal Shem Tov, we know, was a great tzaddik, he was a great mystic. His soul would often connect to the higher realms and the higher worlds. He engaged with many people, many simple folk, but he had his inner circle of disciples that were known as the Chevraya Kaddisha, his holy circle, so to speak. And one time in the Baal Shem Tov synagogue in the morning, there was, after the prayers were over, two people had a fight. Shul politics been going on for many centuries. And the one fellow got really a bit angry with his friend, and he said to him an expression, which I don't know what it means myself. It must have been some expression they would use those days if they were angry with people. And the one guy said to his fellow, I'm going to tear you up like a fish. I'm not sure what that means. I assume what it means is that the fish's skin is very soft and it's easy to tear. So therefore, I'm going to tear you as a fish, right? And in a huff, he went on his way. Baal Shem Tov called together his inner circle. And he asked them to do what he often asked them to do, which is to form a circle, and each one should put their hands on the other person. He asked them to close their eyes to engage in a mystical experience, and he closed the circle by placing his hands on each shoulder. As soon as he did that, many of his disciples started to scream in fear, in fright. What happened was that by completing the circle, the Baal Shem Tov exposed his students to what was taking place in the metaphysical world. Our world is not the only reality. Our world is not the only existence. There are metaphysical worlds. There are spiritual worlds. In Kabbalah, we learn about a whole range of different levels and layers. And he exposed them to what is happening in a spiritual world. And in that world, they saw it actually happening. They saw this person damaging his friend, tearing him up like a fish, so to speak, which scared them, frightened them. And then Baal Shem Tov broke the circle. And the purpose of the exercise was to expose them to this idea that words create. In fact, the word in Hebrew for speech is dibur, which comes from the word davar, a thing. Every time we say something, there's a thing created, right? So therefore, when we do that, when we threaten someone with something, it might not happen in this world, but it has an effect. It has an effect because it creates an energy. It creates a power, it creates a reality, maybe not in the physical tangible, but in the metaphysical. And in turn, that metaphysical reality produces an energy that has an effect in the world of the tangible. So that's the first power of words. Words create. The second thing we find about words is that words reveal. What I mean by that is that words have the power to reveal that which is very hidden. I don't mean only about divulging a secret. I mean, it has the power, a spiritual power, of taking something which lies dormant, hidden, and revealing it. Now, we find this both in the negative and the positive. In the negative, we find a passage, a fascinating passage in the Talmud that talks about the sin of gossip, the sin of Lashon Hara, talking negatively about other people. Now, that's a very complex topic in its own right. And of course, sometimes we are permitted and sometimes even obligated to share negative information about other people if it's for a purpose and a benefit and so on. But nevertheless, we know that normally we look down at this concept of negative gossip, which is a transgression, not an easy one to avoid, but nevertheless, it is considered damaging, it's considered negative. And the Talmud says that gossip, Lashon Hara, damages three people. It damages the person saying the gossip, sharing the gossip. It damages the person listening to the gossip. And it damages the person about whom we are speaking about. So the commentaries ask the question, understand it damages the person sharing gossip. It's a negative thing. Every time you engage in negative behavior, it damages you spiritually, emotionally. We understand how it damages the person listening to the gossip, because that person is facilitating the negative experience, is facilitating the negativity, is being part of the conversation, is welcoming the information. So that's damaging. But if we happen to be talking about so-and-so and he or she doesn't even know that we're talking about him or her, and maybe no one will ever know, we don't ruin his reputation or anything, nevertheless, the Talmud says we're damaging that person. How could that be? And the commentaries explain the following, they explain this is the point. The point is that when we say something negative about the person, if it's true or even if it's not true, or even if it's exaggerated, but nevertheless, that negativity might be true on a subtle level, which means it could be many people are consciously very good people. Many people consciously on a tangible and conscious level behave ethically, morally, in a very beautiful way. And yet somewhere deep in the recesses of their subconscious, they possess the potential for doing something that's negative. We all do. We're all human beings. We all might subtly possess the potential for negativity. And by talking negatively about another person, words reveal. Words have the potential of exposing that negativity from the hidden to the revealed. That's what we mean, that words reveal. Now, the Talmud tells us that whenever something is true in the negative, it is even more true in the positive. So it's not only good to talk about how it works in the negative, it's also good to understand the positivity of this. And Maimonides says, Maimonides explains that someone who's in a leadership position, he says something fascinating. He says that someone who's a scholar, someone who's of stature, and he's in a leadership position, should always talk positively about other people, and he should always judge them favorably. Maimonides puts those two concepts together. Now, we've touched on this before, but what does it mean to judge a person favorably? What does that mean? Does it mean I never recognize evil? Especially if I'm in a leadership position, that actually doesn't really make any sense. Anyone who's in a leadership position or has a circle of influence sometimes needs to recognize evil, needs to recognize something that's wrong. Right? To use an extreme example, if someone's a parent of a young child and gets a telephone from the school, your child is misbehaving, your child stole something, right? To pretend it never happened and say, no, I'm just going to judge favorably. I mean, that's not good, right? So I need to recognize it, what it's for. I need to do something about it. And yet the Maimonides says, judge him favorably or judge her favorably and only talk positively about them. What does that mean? So what it means is, as the commentaries explain, that it doesn't mean necessarily I don't recognize the evil, but I still judge the person favorably, which means I believe in the person. I understand where it's coming from. I judge them favorably in the sense of understand their challenge, and I try to explain to them on their level how it's not befitting for them to be able to behave in such a way. I do it positively. I speak positively. I use positive words. The best example that comes to mind of such a concept is the famous description of Rabbi Dr. Twersky, when he describes the relationship he had with his father in Milwaukee as they grew up there in the States. His father was a strict father, but he says his father would never reprimand negatively. He would always say to him, if there was something that he didn't think was right, he would say to him in Yiddish, he would say, "Es pasnisht," which means it's not befitting for you to behave in such a way because you're so special, right? So in other words, not dismissing the evil, not dismissing the wrong, but you're so special, it's not befitting for you. Why is that so important to speak that way? Why can't we just call out for what it is? Why would we just say it's negative and give it up and stop it? Because when we talk about the goodness of the person, we talk about the spark of the person, we talk about the purity of the person, and perhaps we say in that context that it's not befitting for you to be able to behave that way, words bring out the hidden good, the hidden positivity in that person. So words create and words reveal. Words also bind. What does that mean? We find in the Torah this concept of keeping your word. So we find an interesting thing that a person can, in his or her mind, commit to doing something and it's not binding at all. Yet, as soon as you verbalize it, it connects you to that experience. And therefore, the Torah says, "Kechol asher yetzei mipiv yaaseh," whatever comes out of your mouth, you need to do. It's like a promise, even if you don't say the word promise. If you say, "I'm going to do something," that binds you to that thing. Which is why, incidentally, there's a practice among many people because of the severity of this concept. Even though it's not, it's not everyone does this, but it's an encouraged practice. And when someone says, "I'm going to do something," you're not 1,000% sure that you can do it. You say, "Look, I plan to do this tomorrow, blin leather." Like you put a disclaimer, like, "I'm not binding myself to this." All right, so that disclaimer kind of helps you because words bind. And finally, and perhaps most importantly, and this will express the essence of what the human being is all about, words connect. Words connect us beyond ourselves. They connect us to other people, to other realities, and to a higher being. Words connect us to God also. And this is a very, very important concept. And to understand this properly, up until now, it was just a soft launch. Okay, now we're going to get into something a bit more complex. I hope 8:10 at night is okay for this. So it's a little deeper. So if you lose me, let me know somehow. I'm going to share with you an idea, a deep Kabbalistic idea, which will take me a few minutes and just try and stay with me. But it's based on two principles, two Kabbalistic principles, which I want to just sort of introduce first. The first Kabbalistic principle is that the highest level of something connects with the lower level. So we find this in Kabbalah a lot. It's called in Hebrew, Na'utz Tchilatan Besofan, which means that sometimes Kabbalah talks in layers of something, right? Kind of layers of godly layers or godly levels or whatever, different layers of different concepts that Kabbalah talks about. And we often find that there's a very deep connection between the highest level and the lowest level. And there's a concept, it's connected with the idea that the higher something is, the lower it can come. The higher something is, the greater the ability that something has, possesses to connect with the lowest form of existence. So keep that in your mind for a few minutes. The highest connects with the lowest. The second concept, a very important concept, is that the human being is called an olam katan, a small world, a mini world, which means human beings are the microcosm of the macrocosm. So whatever happens in the structure of the entire universe mirrors itself within the human being. Okay. So let me share with you how this works. The model I'm going to share with you works like this. The world, and you'll see what this has to do with the power of speech as we conclude this idea. The world is divided into four layers, known as, I'll tell you the Hebrew, then I'm going to translate it. Domem, Someach, Chai, Medaber. Now, I'm not sure if it's going to work, but I'm going to actually just try. No, 1 second. Let me just see if I can just share with you quickly. Oh, no, that didn't work. 1 second. Oh, gosh. Oh, maybe it will actually. Hold on. Ah, here we are. Hope you can all see the screen. So just so you see it there, because I don't normally do handouts on Zoom, but let's try. So the first layer of creation is called the domem, known as the silent and the inanimate. That's like rocks, minerals, mountains, earth, and so on, right? So that's the silent and the inanimate objects of the world. I'll come back to this in a minute. The second is tzomeach. Tzomeach are things that grow. Okay? Trees, plants, grass, and so on. The third is chai. Chai means the animal kingdom. Animals, most forms of life, birds, animals, fish, and so on. And finally, the medaber, known as the communicator, which is a reference to the human being. Okay? Now, let's understand the difference between these four realms of creation, these four layers of creation. Prefacing this idea that everything that exists has a soul. Everything has a life. Even the most inanimate has a life. Right? Kabbalistically, we understand this. Nothing exists on its own. There's a divine spark that it keeps everything alive. Okay? However, how much that life force is recognizable depends on what part of the layer of creation we're talking about. So let's go through this. Stay with me because you'll see how this all connects to communication at the end. So the inanimate, the domem, the silent and the inanimate is silent, which means there's no noticeable life. There's no movement, right? So you look at a stone, it looks like something dead, but it's not. There's a life there, but it's very physical and it's completely silent. In fact, the word domem actually means silence. Okay? That's the lowest form of creation. Something just looks like it's completely silent, inanimate, dead. No noticeable life. When we come to things that grow, suddenly there's a noticeable life because there's movement. So you notice there's some life. You see it grow. Therefore, you know there must be something. There's a force that's propelling it to grow. Okay. So when you look at something, a plant, it blossoms, it opens up, it grows, it bears fruits, it bears fruit, it whatever. There's movement. But the movement and the life that we notice in someach, in something that grows, we notice life, but it's a very physical life. In other words, we don't notice a personality. There's no desire. There's no impulses, no instincts. We notice movement, but it's a physical movement. And that physical, that extremely physical, tangible movement that is expressed in the second layer of creation, which is Tzomeach, is represented and symbolized in the fact that things that grow are only alive when they stay in one place, when they're connected to their source. Because that resembles and that represents the finiteness of the physical world. The definition of the physical world as opposed to the spiritual or metaphysical existences is that the physical is very rigid, right? The properties are very confining. So at Tzomeach, we recognize life, but it's very physical life. It's a life which is extremely tangible, although there's a movement, but there's no soul type of life. There's no personality. There's no something that's, it's not an intangible life. It's not a, what we call a nefesh type of life. It's not a soul type of life, right? And that's why trees and things that grow are stuck in one place. Let's move higher. We come to Chaya, we come to the animal. There it's different. Animals move around. The animal, you notice life, but now you begin to notice what we call a soul life. There's a personality of some sort. Different animals, different personalities. There's impulses, there's reactions, there's triggers which bring certain reactions, there's instincts, right? Which is not physical. These are less tangible things. These are things that do more with the soul than the body. These are soul lives, much more spiritual, but yet still limited. How's that expressed? It's expressed in the idea that animals move around, but their personality don't intrinsically change. What doesn't exist with animals is decision-making power. In other words, if you provoke an animal, unlike human beings, or let's say unlike what human beings are supposed to do, the animal does not absorb the capacity to say, no, I want to charge this person and hurt them, but I'm going to think through it. And I'm going to come to the conclusion that it's not beneficial for me to do that. It's not constructive. It's not effective. And therefore, I'm going to have self-control and I'm going to hold myself back from doing that. And I'm going to make a decision to exercise self-control and not do what I was going to do. An animal doesn't possess that process at all. And therefore, although the life you see in an animal is soul life, it's not just physical life, it's really soul life. But it's still very limited in the fact that animals don't change. They grow, but they don't change. Where do you see change? You see that in a human being. Human being has the power to change. Human being can use intellect, has decision-making processes, can modify its behavior, can start behaving in a different way than before, can exercise self-control. It's much less limited, and that's the power of the human being. But to understand the true power of the human being, we need to now take, based on the principle of Olam Katan, that the human being is a small world. So let's just summarize this. We need to take these four things. A, again, Domem, the inanimate, the silent, where there's no noticeable life, the Tzomer, the vegetation that grows, where life is noticeable, there's movement, but very rigid, and it's very physical. The chai, the animal, which is already a soul life, it's a much more metaphysical life, but yet still has its limitations, it doesn't change. And the human being, which is soul life that changes, right? That can truly grow. And now we need to explore, based on the principle that a person is a mini world, a mini universe, how do those things reflect themselves in the structure of the human being? What part of us is the inanimate? What part of us is the growth? What part of us is things that grow? What part of us is the animal? And what part of us is truly human? So, I'll stop the sharing so we can see everyone again. So the way it works like this, the way it works is the following. And again, this is a Kabbalistic concept. Within the human being, the first three, the inanimate, the vegetation, and the animal, represents the three layers of human consciousness. Now, the three layers of human consciousness is explained in different ways, but this is the way we can explain it now, in this particular explanation. The inanimate within the human being, as we started off tonight saying, the inanimate is words. And no, I didn't say communication, I said words. As we said, words themselves are nothing. There's no life in words unless you put something into the words. Words on their own is the inanimate within the person. They have nothing, there's no life in them, they're meaningless, they're empty. And sometimes we find that people use words that way, where they're meaningless and empty. But anyway, words on their own are meaningless and empty. So the domem, it's the silent part of our consciousness. What's the tzomeach? What's the vegetation? What's the growing trees and plants within our personality? That's our emotion. That's our midot, our emotional responses. Let's understand why. With emotion, with our feelings, first of all, there's already life. But it's and there's growth. But like a plant, it's like a physical life which doesn't change. There's no change. There's personality there, but it's not something that can actually, it's rooted in the ground. It doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't intrinsically change. What do I mean by that? So let's contrast those two things. With midot, with emotion, there's growth. For example, emotions grow. So let's say a person is born with a very strong emotion of love. When they're a child, they'll love silly things, or what we call silly. When they grow up, they'll love better things. They'll connect to greater things, right? So yeah, emotions grow. Now, by the way, I'm not talking about emotions as they are guided by the head. I'm talking about pure emotions there, right? If a person is born with a temperament of becoming very angry, so what irritates them when they're 4 years old won't be the same thing that irritates them when they're 40 years old. So they change. But we also know, and we've talked about this on other occasions, that the hardest thing to change, or almost the impossible thing to change within a person, intrinsically change, is our emotions, because that's where our personality lives. That's who we are. Can't change your emotion. You can guide it, you can control it, you can channel it, you can express it effectively, but you don't really change. Which, by the way, is why most human beings have temptations for the entire life. In other words, a person gets used to good habits, but at the end of the day, if a person has a very strong personality of being very easily frustrated and getting angry and has a problem with the, or jealous or frustrated, and the same thing in the good, they will always have that. There'll always be temptation. The goalposts will move, the ease will move, the struggle will become different, but it'll always be there. Because emotions are like a tree, they're stuck in one place. They don't change intrinsically. And left untrained, left unchanneled, left to their own devices, they really won't change. They'll always be what they are. They will grow into other things, so the anger will become for different concepts. the love will be for more sophisticated things. But you know, the four-year-old will like the little toy, the four-year-old will like the fancy car, but the emotion will be exactly the same. It's a little bit hard on Zoom. I hope everyone's following me. If not, let me know. You can put on the chat if you want, also a question if you want. Okay. What's the highest level of consciousness? Again, the first three are the three layers of consciousness. A higher level of consciousness is the mind, intellect. And the intellect in this explanation is called the animal of the person. Now, why is the animal, what does it mean, the animal of the person? Because with the mind, a person could change, meaning they could shift. They could control their emotions. Okay. Now, normally we talk about this, that this is the tool, the key to a person's growth. That is, we make choices, live in the mind. That's true. And normally we talk about the real power of the human being lies in the mind, but it's actually not entirely true, because we'll see in a second. So yes, one of the most powerful things of the human being is the mind, because it's our mind that allows us to pause, to step back, to make a decision. But even people who live very ethically and make good choices using the power of the mind, this is the hard part, so follow carefully. Using the power of the mind, using the power of decision-making processes, using the power to exercise self-control. At the end of the day, I make those decisions to be an improved me, but it's still me. It's still me. I haven't become someone that's not me. In other words, I'm still not trapped, but I'm still limited by me. It's an improved me. It's a guided me. It's perhaps a positive me. I'm using the mind to channel, guide, and improve the expression and manifestation of my emotions and my behavior, but it's still me.
Who is the me? The emotions?
Yes.
That's the me.
Well, that's where the me lives, really, yeah.
Okay.
Well, we'll see the true me, but yes, the conscious me, put it that way. Okay. The conscious me is it lives in my emotions, lives in who we are, respond to the world, my personality. Right. So even if I use the mind, which is an incredibly important tool, and it's one of the greatest tools the human being possesses, right? In the layers of the human being using the model of the world, it's still only called the animal. Animal means I'm not limited to one spot. I can channel, I can move, I can improve, I can move around. But I never really change. Similar to what an animal does, an animal never really changes. Just the animal within the human being can be much more improved than the animal on the street. But it's still called an animal because I never really go beyond me. I can become a great me, but it's still me. And the most powerful, unique power of the human being is that we actually possess the ability to go beyond me. And where is that live? And what's that part of the human being? So Kabbalah teaches us that part of the human being is in the subconscious, in the depths of the soul. And what lives in the depths of the soul? Listen to this. The power of communication. The power of communication. Consistent with the expression that's talked about in Kabbalah that says, Hanefesh mele'ah otiyot, that the essence of the soul is filled with words. Now, what does that mean? What does it mean? So I have empty words on the bottom of layer of my existence, my consciousness. I have my emotions. I have the mind. And then deep down, I possess the power of communication. What is the power of communication? Which is at the depth of my soul. And why does it live in the depth of my soul? The power of communication lives in the depth of my soul because communication, or the power of communication, or the power of effective communication, human communication, allows me to go leave my world and to connect with the world of another. And only a human being can do that. Only a human being possesses the power that no matter how great the me is, no matter how perfect and improved and developed and refined the me is, but I have a power to go beyond the me and to connect or to submit or to expand into the world of another. Now, that world of another could be another human being, where I learn from their perspective and their world and their reality, or the other could be God. That's why communication in divine service is so important. That's why tefillah, prayer, is so important. Torah, learning Torah, is so important. It's all part of divine communication. Because the human being, and only the human being in the entire creation, possesses the power to go beyond its own world. And the method, the tool, the power of going beyond our world is the power of communication. As we've talked about many times, that communication, when we mean communication in this context, we don't just mean babbling on. We don't just mean expressing who we are. We mean the talking to another, right? Just to briefly explain for those who maybe wouldn't have heard this before. We know that the Talmud tells us that even animals have communication, but it's a different type of communication. The communication animals have is the communication of signal sending. An animal will emit a signal saying, I'm hungry, I'm scared, I'm going to attack, right? And another animal will pick up on it. But what that means is that the animal is only just broadcasting its world, right? Now, sometimes human beings do this as well. That's not coming from the essence of the soul. That's just an animalistic communication. Sometimes when we communicate, we broadcast ourselves. We don't read audiences. We don't connect to the world of another. We don't study the world of the other, right? Real human communication means the ability to go beyond my world, to talk to another person that I'm talking to them. I'm entering their world, which means first I have to understand their world, which is the power of listening, the power of exploring, the power of being attentive, the power of being mindful in the relationship, noticing the audience, noticing the recipient, noticing the person that's listening, and then saying words which bring us closer, which connect us. And that is the essence of being human, because the essence of being human is the power to grow. And true growth doesn't only mean an improved self, that's also growth. When I stay within who I am and just make it better, make it more positive, that's also growth, that's great. The power of communication really is to go, is the power of the human being is to grow, meaning grow means growing beyond myself. To learn, to absorb, to explore, to expand into other worlds, beyond who I am. Which is only happens through real communication, connection. So to give you a simple example, someone says something to me that I don't like. So if I blow up and just respond that way, I'm just signal sending. That's just bad. I'm just expressing myself. I might feel good temporarily, but it's not helping the communication at all. I can be clever about it. I can use my mind and I can not respond. I can just say something and diffuse the situation and walk away. That's good. That's using the mind. That's making a choice not to blow up. That's fantastic. Normally we say that's really what a human being is all about, and to a great degree it is, but it's something much deeper than that. I can go deeper. I can say, no, let me reveal within myself the selfless part of who I am. Let me remember the humility that I am. Let me remember that I am not the only person around. I'm not the only existence. I'm not the only reality. Let me try and understand the other person. Not just to diffuse situation, have self-control, but deeper than that. Let me find the words that will bring us closer. Let me find the words that will make me talk to your world, or make me understand your world, or make me enter a different perspective and learn from that perspective, learn from that other reality. Now, what causes us to be able to do that? That's much deeper than the mind. The mind is my consciousness. The mind is me. What I possess at the very essence of my soul is the godly spark. And the godly spark, that's a spark of infinity. It's a spark of selflessness. It's a spark of being able to leave myself and go beyond myself, to free myself from myself, and to embrace another world, creating a relationship, creating a connection. Ultimately, from a Jewish point of view, the ultimate goal of that is to create a relationship which is so great, not just between me and other human beings, but between me and God, which also requires surrender, requires submission, requires negating the ego, right? Now, how does that happen? It's the power of communication, which is the power of connection. It'll still need to use the mind because we need to think about what to say and how to communicate. But then taking the other principle that we said before, not just the principle that the person is a small world, but the other person that the highest level connects with the lowest level, it's the power of communication in me that combines with the lowest part of who I am, which is empty words. And the combination of that has the most tremendous power. The power of communication connects with, expresses itself in the words, which the words on their own are just empty. But why words filled with content become so powerful? Because it's rooted, and the origin is in the power of communication. And the power of communication is very deep. It's deeper than our consciousness even. Now, the surgeon's warning here, of course, is that once we introduce the subconscious, there's something else that swims around the subconscious, and that is our ego. That's why words can be so powerful. Our subconscious connects, our depth connects with words, with empty words, and that creates the power. But if the subconscious is the ego expressing itself, then the words become destructive. That's why communication is so powerful. It's either amazingly connecting or amazingly dividing. It's either amazingly constructing or amazingly destructing. So that's why when we talk and we use words, our pause and our reflection has to be not just what's the clever thing to say, or what's going to make this go away, or what's going to be beneficial for me, right? You know, there's a book that everyone knows, I'm sure, right, which I don't particularly like. It's How to Win, you know, from Dale Carnegie. How to win friends. How's it go? How to win friends and influence people, right? That's not real communication. That book is not real communication. That's communication that comes from the mind, which means what's the best words I can choose that can be good for me. That's not real communication. Real communication is what are the best words I can use that are going to connect me. You see the difference? Not just what's good for me, because then it's still me. What's the power of my words? What type of communication that can I engage in that's going to take me beyond me? So that I can expand into a different perspective, in a different world. I can learn from a great infinite world, which is created by an infinite God. That's a different story altogether. And when we use communication that way, that is the very essence of what a human being is. That's why Kabbalah tells us that hanefesh mele'a otiyot, the soul is filled with words, meaning the soul is The soul is synonymous with the power of communication. Because the depth of our soul, that's the spark of God, the infinite spark. That's where selflessness lives. That's where humility lives. And that's where the power of connection lives. The power of communication. And that's the human within our structure. So again, the words that we have, that's the lowest part of who we are. That's the stone. That's the inanimate. The vegetation is our emotion. The animal is our mind. That's the three layers of our consciousness, but it's still us. The essence of the human being is the layers of the subconscious, the power of communication, the depth of what it means to be human, the ability to connect beyond ourselves, which we do using the mind and expressing ourselves through words. It's the combination of the power of communication with the words themselves that create this powerful, powerful energy that allows us to connect beyond ourselves. It's the highest level, connects to the lowest level, and connects us further. Of course, what that means is, in a practical level, is obviously the aspiration to use, this was a more of a Kabbalistic idea, it wasn't to sort of give the strategy so much, but it's more about understanding this idea, right? And understanding the idea that we need to not shy away from communication. Communication is the biggest gift that was given to us. Communication is the gift of being human. So therefore, it doesn't help us to just not talk. We must talk. We must communicate. But it must be language that is a communication language, a connecting language, a language that creates relationships and connections. You know, and highlights the differences between us, because when we connect, we're connecting to something different. That's why, you know, in so many modern day literature, John Gottman, for example, the expert on marriages, talks about that couples need to argue. It's important to argue because we're different. It's just a question of how we argue. What is the language that we use? Is the language one that connects us and we build and we expand and we deepen? And we become richer because of our differences, or is it dividing and destructive and puts us apart? But this comes from a very, very important realization, which goes to the heart of what it means to be human and what it means to grow as a human being. It gives us that pause to reflect and just to stop and think about this for a moment. That the me lives in our consciousness, but the power to go beyond me lives in a depth of who we are. And that's the infinite spark, the infinite energy that we possess to connect beyond ourselves and to create real relationships. And that comes from the foundation of selflessness that we possess. And that's an important thing because like when we start to get frazzled and we start to get upset with things, we start to be intolerant and not understand others or not connect to other people, that is all normal and natural. But then we also have to stop and think and reflect on the depth that we have the ability to understand other people and other things. We have the ability to connect what is beyond us. And ultimately, it translates into our connection with God, which is why in the Torah, we have a range of mitzvot. We have mitzvot that are rational, that we understand, and then we have the mitzvot which God gives us, which are called chukim, the ones he gives us that we don't understand. And in today's society, people often talk about this concept that I don't like to do things that don't talk to me, that they don't gel with me, that I don't understand, they're not rational to my mind. And that is because we live in a society where we've forgotten this art a little bit of what it means to go beyond myself, which is why relationships are in so much trouble today. Because people are trapped within themselves, and sometimes the trap within themselves is not such a bad self. It just prevents them from understanding someone else or something else. But when we understand, and this is why God gave us this training, we know it's healthy for us to do things we don't understand. It's healthy for us to connect higher and to surrender to a higher being. Because that gives us the training of being able to go beyond ourselves and to be free from ourselves in order to, by the way, when I talk about being free from ourselves, it doesn't mean that I'm not talking about the dilution of self. I'm not talking about the negation of self, because in a relationship, the self is important, but it means growing beyond who we are and connecting to another world. So that's just sort of the foundations of what real communication means and what the power of communication means from a Kabbalistic perspective. Next week, we're going to talk about some important things to do with relationship. We're going to talk about the relationship between speech and thought. That's an important discussion because it gives us a bit of an understanding of, today I spoke about the power of communication is, next week I'm going to talk about how the power of communication actually works. What is speech versus thought, and how do the two things relate to each other, and how do they interact with each other? Exploring an idea in Kabbalah called Tzimtzum and Gilui, which means holding back and giving and so on. We'll talk about the feminine and masculine energy and aspects of communication have to do with that. Some of the power behind some of the Hebrew letters, which have to do with our communication, and some other concepts to do with communication. So I hope that was okay. It's hard to get feedback on Zoom, but I hope that was beneficial. And hopefully next week we'll continue the discussion. So wish everyone a good night. And
thank you very much, Rabbi. I very much enjoyed it.
Thank you. Very interesting.
Thanks, Rabbi.
Thanks, Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi. Appreciate it.
It was a pleasure. All the best.
All the best. God bless.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi Grary.
Rabbi, can I ask you a question before you go?
Sorry, yes, please. Pleasure.
I'm just curious. I actually thought this would be more on the Hebrew otiyot, the letters. Not that but that'll be next week. But I just wanted to ask you, why, in your opinion, was the samach not used when it talks about the creation? The letter samach.
It's not used in the creation. What do you mean by that?
No, when God recounts the up to the Shabbat, the letter samach is not used.
Which is interesting. I have to explore that. Interesting.
Yeah. I think the gimel is used on day 3 or 4, but I was reading the, you know, up to the Friday night Kiddush, that section, up to, it says it was Yom Shishi, the sixth day. And yeah, no samach.
Because samach is a circle. A circle represents infinity. And infinity was only introduced to the world when the human being came along, but I'm not sure. I'll have to explore that.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. It's also a sod, and it's also the samach mem has got the samach in it. So yeah. I was curious about that.
Interesting.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
All the best.
Thanks,
all
Rabbi.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thanks, Rabbi.
Thank you.